At the end of the chapter, the last section, the title is Eigenvalues Focalization. The meaning of the importance also of localization techniques is due to I have said this to you many times. Eigenvalues computation is a difficult task. So often it is sufficient to have an idea to know a region, subset of C in which eigenvalues are, in order to have an idea of the solution of the problem, the linear problem we have to solve. Essentially, the result you find in this, it's not the last section, there is another short section regarding diagonal dominance. The essential results are this so-called Gerd-Schnorring I write this capital letters theorems. The so-called the first theorem is well known. If you don't remember, I don't know if those of you coming from other university have already seen this theorem. The first theorem states that eigenvalues must be in the union of n circles in the complex plane, colored K sub 1, and colored also Gerd-Schnorring circles, which are defined in this way. A short example for those of you who don't know this result. If you have a matrix, here you will find an example. I consider the same matrix you find here, 3 by 3, so this is the matrix. I would like to know something about its eigenvalues without explicitly computing them. This theorem involves three circles whose centers are the main entries respectively of K sub 1, so 15, 10 and 0. And they are ready, the sum, as written here, of the absolute values of the entries of A lying along the same row, except for the entry, the diagonal entry which is the same.
So the radius of the first circle is
the modulus, the absolute value of minus 2 and plus 2, so 4.
Here is 1 plus, last one 3, so also here is 4. And on the third row, 2 plus 1. So the theorem simply states that we are sure necessarily all eigenvalues belongs to the union of these three circles. Usually
one sketches the three circles, the center 15, radius 4, so we go from 11 to 19, center 10, radius 4, from 6 to 14, and the last, center 0, and radius 3. These are the three circles. You have to consider their union. Well, the three eigenvalues must be inside this region. This can be a useful information in many cases. The central, the basic fact which implies the result is an inequality which is needed in order to generalize, to extend the result. We will do. We will extend this result in a special form to irreducible matrices. So we start from knowing this. In order to make this extension, we need the an inequality which appears in the proof. I don't want to expand the completely the proof, but I try to allow only what is strictly needed for the extension of the theorem. In the proof, we start from the usual definition of eigenvalue and eigenvector. Then, let us consider an index P for which the absolute value of x sub p is maximum. And from the expansion of the definition, you'll find for the index p, you find at the left-hand side the product of the row p of the matrix
by the eigenvector. At the right hand side, lambda by xp.
This is an equation regarding vectors. This is the same equation written for the index, the particular index chosen in this way. It is possible to to send to the right side the term containing xp that necessarily appears on the left. So on the left, only the sum, only the terms with j different from p, and on the right we have
So the conclusion is obtained in two steps. Let me put as a factor x sub p on the right hand side. The two steps are these. We divide both members by xp.
Divide by xp, so xp here does not more appear. We apply the moduli, and finally we put the moduli inside the sum and exploit the fact that these ratios are less or equal to 1.
We have found that the distance between a generic eigenvalue and this complex number is less or equal than this non-negative number. So this is the center of the pith Gerskoni circle, and this is the radius of the same circle. So we have proved the result. What we want to do? We consider the particular important and frequent case that the matrix A is irreducible. In this case, a version of this theorem holds, which is called third Gerskoni theorem for irreducible matrices, which says the statement
is the following.
If A is irreducible, and if an eigenvalue lambda belongs or to the boundary
frontiera
of all
the case of I's
which it belongs,
if lambda is in the circle, then it is on the boundary of the circle.
Then, this is the result, lambda belongs to the boundary of all the circles.
An example, then we will sketch the proof.
An example which is a famous example
as matrix A, we consider the
three diagonal matrix of the generic order N, may be defined in this way.
Is it very special three-diagonal matrix. Besides being three-diagonal, it has entries, all the same values along the three diagonals. Matrix of this kind, or slightly modified, come out from many applications. The questions. A is reducible or is irreducible? You can see easily that this matrix has any three diagonal matrix having non-zero entries along the adjacent diagonals is irreducible. The irreducibility derives easily from the fact that you have a close path which touches all the nodes. You go from, I don't sketch the graph, it is very simple. We're from the first node, 1, to the second, from the second to the third, from the third to the fourth, until the last. So you have a closed path, direct path. So there cannot be a partition over the set of nodes which would make the matrix reducible.
So the answer is yes.
Then we can apply the third Gerskorin theorem in order to know something about eigenvalues, about the values that the eigenvalues can or cannot have. In this case, the Gerskorin circles are only of two types, those with center 2 and radius 2. Which are the circles related to all the rows from the second to the n minus 1 row, and the two circles obtained from the first and the last row. The center is the same, but the radius is 1. Well, we use, I don't know about the statement, the question which is answered by the third Gerskorin theorem is the following. Can zero be eigenvalue of A? By the first Gerskorin theorem, the answer would be yes, it is possible. It is not sure, but it is possible. Why? Because if we consider the union of all the circle, we obtain the circle with the larger radius, which contains zero. So, if we know only the first theorem, we could think that zero could be eigenvalue of A. So, in that case, A could be singular, not invertible. By the third theorem, since A is irreducible, we see that zero is on the boundary of all the circles to which it belongs. So, if it is an eigenvalue, it must belong to the boundary of all the circle, included the smaller circle. This is not true, so zero cannot be eigenvalue. So this theorem is usually used to deny that some particular value is an eigenvalue under assumptions of irreducibility. How can we convince ourselves of this fact? We need the central expansion of the proof of the first theorem. I write it briefly again. We obtained it before that. Inequalities, odd. But if lambda belongs to the boundary of K sub P, This means that the distance from the center is equal to the radius. This is the distance from the center of K sub P. This is the radius.
These two quantities are equal, so
also this quantity must be equal to both. What does it mean?
In particular, if we have
this equality, this means that if A sub pj is different from zero,
then
this ratio must make one. Which means that there is another value of the index for which the
I write here
the absolute value of the generic entry of the eigenvector is maximum.
This is the maximum.
This means, by the proof of the first Gregorian theorems, that lambda belongs to K sub J2. Is it clear? By this equality, we must have equality between the same terms here and here. And equality holds if and only if for the j, the values of j, for which a sub bj is different from zero, when this ratio has one value. But this means that the corresponding entry of the eigenvector has the same value as x sub p, which was chosen, as the maximum. For the same reason for which lambda belongs to k sub p, for the same reason, lambda must belong also to K sub J. The irreducibility. What is the role played by irreducibility? On the role of index P, there must be at least another index different from P such that A sub PJ is different from zero. If we consider the row P corresponding to the maximum entry, maximum entry in absolute value, there must be at least one value J different from P outside the diagonal such that the corresponding entry is different from zero, otherwise A would be reducible. If we hold zeros outside the diagonal, this is a particular case of reducibility. So we go from P to some other index J. But again, from the reducibility of the matrix, there exists for
any index S directed path of the form P, say P1, P sub 2, P sub R, P sub R equal to S in the graph, in the related graph. Corresponding to R entries of the following form all different from zero. I repeat, from irreducibility such that P sub 1, P sub 2, the last, P sub R, which is S, all different from zero, for irreducibility.
And for each of these entries different from zero, we find that starting from lambda belonging to K sub P, that lambda must belong to all the circles, the Gersh-Göring circles, corresponding to the various indices appearing in this chain, in this path. At last, lambda belongs to any circle, moreover, by the assumption of the theorem, lambda belongs to the boundary of all of the circles. The matrix we have seen in the example, the tridiagonal matrix, the result that we have found directly applying this theory can also be seen under a more general light, introducing a property which is called diagonal dominance. Predominanza diagonale. Diagonal dominance. I think you know at least one definition of diagonal dominance. We now will simply extend the definition that you probably know. The first definition is strong diagonal dominance which I will use the same indices. Okay. The absolute value of the principal entry, the generic and principal entry, must be strictly larger than the sum of the moduli, the absolute values of the other entries on the same row. diagonal dominance without weak, simply diagonal dominance,
generally is defined with
the weak inequality. With the additional requirement that
the inequality is strict or strong, strict for at least one value of A,
for at least one row.
I think it's clear, but these definitions are given on the rows of a matrix, and simply mean both that all along each row
the principal entry must be in absolute value larger, strictly larger,
or
weakly
larger,
it can be also equal
to the sum of the absolute values
of the other entries along the same row. The second type, the second kind of diagonal dominance, this is important, requires that there exists at least one row exists such that this inequality is strict, strong. Equality does not hold for at least one row. It is simple to derive from these two definitions the following result, which gives a useful aspect of this property. Strong or also strict. Strong diagonal dominance, not singular. Diagonal dominance plus irreducibility again non-singular. If you think again of the previous example, you can easily imagine the proof. In the second case, diagonal dominance, it was the case of the triangle matrix. Let us consider the case for n equal to 3 of the previous matrix, for simplicity. You have diagonal dominance on the second row. You have the equality 2, 1 plus 1, but on the first row and also on the last row, the strict inequality holds.
So this matrix is
diagonal dominant. We have seen and also explained why it is irreducible.
So it is non-singular.
Why? Because I can apply the Gauss-Göring theorem. This isn't the first Gauss-Göring theorem. This is the third Gauss-Göring theorem.
And I'm able to exclude
that lambda equal to zero is eigen.
Lambda zero is not eigenvector. And this way I obtain non-singularity. The matrix is invertible with all the nice consequences of this fact.
Well, we finish here the first part of the course. Next time, on Friday, you will begin with Professor Bigi the optimization module. Okay? Questions? Thank you.